Well, Caroline Kennedy is the author of 10 best-selling books, but it's not hard to see that she holds great affection for poetry because half of those titles are poetry books. Her latest collection, Poems to Learn by Heart, focuses on the skill of memorizing important poems. In the book, she talks about an ancient teacher named Seneca who could memorize 2,000 names in order. Poetry has also obviously played an important role in the Kennedy family for decades, really, and it's an honor to welcome Caroline Kennedy to this table. Welcome and welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you.
Well, you arrive in Kansas City today just as you've been making national headlines about a certain post within the Obama administration that you apparently have been offered, and this would be the job of ambassador to Japan. Has the offer been formally extended?
I was an early supporter of Barack Obama, and I continue to think that he is doing an outstanding job as president. So I don't really have anything to say about that or position or anything that's happening or has not happened, because I don't really know anything.
If we wake up tomorrow morning and it's a formal offer has been extended, should I be surprised or not?
I don't know.
Yeah. Just don't know.
I don't know
okay.
how easily surprised you are.
Yeah. Well, we've never had a female ambassador to Japan before. How big of a deal would that be if it comes about, Caroline?
I guess it would be a big deal. I don't know. You should probably ask somebody in the administration or somebody in the Japanese government.
All right. Well, from Japan to poetry, every Mother's Day, you and your brother would find a poem, copy it down, and give it to your mom. She kept those poems in a scrapbook, and you came across one not long ago from your brother, who was very young at the time, and this poem is called Careless Willie. Can you recite Careless Willie for us, or recall at least what the poem was about?
Both I can. We had sort of an open-ended process where we had to select a poem for her for holidays, and they really ran the gamut from serious to more lighthearted. And when I was putting together these anthologies and I was trying to – I thought what John and I enjoyed, the poems that we liked when we were children, would probably appeal to other kids as well. So I was looking through the scrapbook as a good place to start, and I came across Careless Willie, and it really made me laugh. It was like seeing a photograph of us at a certain age, and it goes like this. Careless Willie, with a thirst for gore, nailed his sister to the door. Mother cried with humor quaint, "Careful, Willie, don't spoil the paint." So that pretty much sums up our relationship as children.
Back in those days, it says something very poignant and direct about what were you doing to young John at the time
that would cause him to come up with
a poem like that?
Of course I did nothing. He was just, you know, trying to get attention.
Yeah. You know, poetry's roots in your family obviously run so deep. Where did that come from in the Kennedy gene? I mean, your father talked poetry, your uncles did. Where did that come from?
Well, I think a lot of it came from my mother, actually. She grew up going to visit her grandfather every Wednesday after dancing class, and they would memorize poems together. And she it was something that I think she had a special relationship with her grandfather, and I think it was something that she wanted to continue for us. And she introduced my father to a lot of the poetry that he quoted in his speeches, and my uncles as well. So I think that obviously my father read deeply in history and politics, but I think that the poetry really came through her. They really shared an interest in classical period history as well, So I think that that's part of it, whether it's Ulysses by Tennyson or Robert Frost reading at my father's inauguration. But it was something that's really part of family life, too. My grandmother loved The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, I will say that. So I think I was lucky in that it was something that the generations shared in our family. And my uncle Teddy would always show up at my book signings and offer to recite The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere to anyone in the bookstore who wanted to listen to him.
Whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but it was great. He had he brought so much joy to the undertaking, and it really made us kids believe that we could, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, something dramatic would happen and change the course of history. So I think people underestimate the power of generations sharing these very important kind of touchstones of our values, our civilization. And now that poetry and spoken word and open mic competitions and poetry slams are having a comeback.
Yeah.
I think that it's a chance to get kids who might not otherwise be so interested in reading or poetry to really get involved with language, which is something that's critical to their ongoing education and life.
You know, I cover politics for a living, and I've always thought that so many presidents since your father sort of missed a bet by not focusing and relying on poetry more, because poetry, it seems to me, has such an ability to elevate things and appeal to our higher ideals in such important ways. And you just don't hear that much poetry coming from presidents since your dad.
Well, I think it's a respect for language. And if you read the great writers, it gives you, as my mother used to say, an appreciation of excellence that will shape your whole life. And so the better we communicate our ideas, our values, our emotions, the more likely we are to get results. And so I think there's sort of a language isn't as well used as it used to be, perhaps. And I think that people really respond to that, to poetry in public life as well as in their private life.
There was such a – you mentioned the moment at your father's inauguration when Robert Frost was called up to recite a poem. And if I remember right, it was such a bitterly cold day, and the sun was shining in such a way that Robert Frost couldn't read the words that were in front of him. And he had to sort of stop and pause and sort of rear up and then recite a different poem from heart, which was such an amazing moment for folks who were there.
And the poem that he recited was called The Gift Outright,
That's
and
right.
it's all
That's
about
right. yeah.
America and how we become Americans and sort of incorporate the land and the spirit of the land into our society. And so it's it was very poetic all around, and I think really it's nice to see that tradition coming back with Elizabeth Alexander and James Del Blanco now and Maya Angelou. So I think it's a great time to showcase poetry. But I think that what we're also seeing is that throughout school now and after school and outside of school, kids are writing poems, I mean, inspired in part by the music that they listen to.
Yeah.
And it really can have a transformative impact on their lives because it puts them in touch with their emotions. It teaches them to listen to each other in a classroom and to really respect each other and, I think, bridge sort of gaps of understanding. And it also gives them the confidence to stand up and talk and express themselves, advocate for change. So I think it has a real role to play in terms of personal development.
You talk about that in the introduction to this new collection about, you know, when a young person can sort of stand up and recite a poem in front of a little crowd even the first time, the change that comes over them, the confidence that gives them to be able to carry forth with other and bigger tasks ahead, I guess.
Right. I think that's true. And I think poems are meant to be spoken. It's rhythm. It's rhyme. And I think that kids really discover something inside of themselves that's very powerful.
Well, again, this new collection is titled Poems to Learn by Heart, and we have a whole series of poems that some of KCUR's own staffers have recorded here. Here's Alex Smith. He's going to read a poem out of this collection. This one is titled The First Book.
Open it. Go ahead. It won't bite. Well, maybe a little. More a nip, like a tingle. It's pleasurable, really. You see, it keeps on opening. You may fall in. Sure, it's hard to get started. Remember learning to use knife and fork? Dig in. You'll never reach the bottom. It's not like the end of the world, just the world as you think you know it.
Well, you write that people often ask you why they should learn a poem by heart. And your answer to that question is?
Well, if you have it inside of you, you have it forever. You can share it. You don't have to give it away. But a lot of these great lines of poetry will come back, you know, and just capture the moment that you're in a way that gives you the sense that someone else has been there before. And if it's a difficult moment, you can handle it. If it's an inspiring moment, you can appreciate it more. So I think it really enriches your whole life. And it's not just kids either, you know. Adults, everybody hates or is intimidated by poetry, and it's really not that scary. So there's a lot of funny poems in here, too, about monsters and homework and all kinds of things. But, you know, 14% of American adults can't read. And We have a huge problem in this country, and I think that we need to sort of make the spoken word, the written word, a lot more accessible and a lot more enjoyable. And we do that by sharing it with people that we care about.
Well, in some cases, poets haven't done themselves any favors because, you know, a lot of it is pretty hard for people to get their arms around and grasp. I mean, even Robert Frost, he's known for some of his very famous works, but some of his poems, you get through them and you're like, what's he talking about? You know, it's tough.
Right. But there's plenty of others.
Of course.
And so you just can't let yourself get intimidated. I mean, why would you be scared of that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have another poem. That first poem was titled The First Book. It's by Rita Dove. Caroline, how did you pick the different pieces that appear in this book? How did you go about picking them?
Well, I read a lot of poems. I went back to poems that my brother and I had chosen for my mother, and those are scattered throughout. And I asked my kids, I asked my friends, and I work with a poetry group in the Bronx of students, and I got four of them to come and help me and sort through the poems. I thought it would be – they are incredible poets. And
tell us about them, because you've become good friends with them over the years.
And perform these incredible compositions of their own. But they hadn't spent as much time learning older poems. And so I thought it would be interesting to get their take on, you know, what was bearable to them or what was seemed really too old-fashioned, as well as to include one of their poems, which is a group composition, which is something that kids are doing more and more today also. So I wanted the book to have some of the old-fashioned traditional favorites that I grew up with and that really have amazing language and images in them, as well as to have a more contemporary selection for kids who may speak other languages at home or come from different cultural traditions as well.
And you've developed good relationships with some of these kids.
Yeah, I've watched them now grow from like high school. They're now in college, some of them, and they're performing, they're writing. And I think that poetry has really enabled them to pursue their college dreams, to be engaged in their community. They decided to have a poetry slam open mic on Valentine's Day last year, where they also partnered with a local hospital and did HIV testing. So they shared poems, they had pizza, and they tested anyone who came. So, I mean, it really shows you that this is something that can empower a whole community and people can share their experiences.
Caroline Kennedy is our guest as she speaks this evening at the Unity Temple on the Plaza. It's an event sponsored by Rainy Day Books and Fairway. The event is sold out, but you can make arrangements to get an autographed copy of Caroline's new book by calling Rainy Day Books, 913-384-3126, or you can go to the Rainy Day Books website, rainydaybooks.com. Let's go to another poem here. This poem is titled A Blessing. It's read by KCUR's Linda Scher, and this poem is by James Wright. Here's Linda Scher.
Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom.
Now, Caroline, you talk about ways to improve one's ability to memorize poems, and in this book you talk about the ancient Roman teacher named Seneca, who had this amazing ability to memorize lots of names and lots of lines. What was his secret?
Well, they created these memory palaces, and The way they did it was that they pictured a building, one of the big Roman buildings, but we could do it with a downtown area or your house. And as they moved mentally through the rooms, they placed the lines and images from the poem around the room. And so then when they memorized the poem and they would picture themselves walking that same route, the poem would come back to them. It sounds to me incredibly complicated. But he was able, as you said, to memorize 2,000 lines of poetry back and recite them backwards. So it must work. I would love it if some people would give it a try and call you next week and let you know how it's going.
Have you achieved 2,000 lines yet yourself here?
No, I have not achieved 2,000 lines. No. That's why I had to write it down in a book.
Yeah. Well, you must have a favorite poem or two that you fall back on from time to time. What are they?
Well, lately, I think, especially with the change in seasons, I was the poem that your colleague just read was a great kind of early spring poem, but there's a Robert Frost poem called Dust of Snow where the snow falls on him, and instead of ruining it, it makes him realize how wonderful the day is, just something unexpected that happens and the power of that. So I love that poem. And then there are other poems in here that that bring back personal memories, like The Secret, which is one of the ones that I memorized when I was young from my mother, which is also actually happens to be by Robert Frost, or The Charge of the Light Brigade, which is my cousins and I had a lot of recitation competitions, and the boys were always memorizing war poems, and so I decided I wanted to do that too, so I memorized that. So it's the Gettysburg Address is in here, which I thought was important, which my own children memorized when we went to Gettysburg and recited for my Uncle Teddy. So I think if you can kind of weave it into family life, it really sticks with you and makes it something that kids will carry on and enjoy on their own.
Did the memorization come tough for you, or was it not so bad?
It used to come more easily than it does now, but I'm going to work on it some more.
You mentioned you didn't pick all these poems by yourself and that you had some help from others. I want to go to one more poem here that Beth Lipoff reads from us. She's UpToDate's intern, and she reads It Couldn't Be Done by Edgar Albert Guest.
Somebody said that it couldn't be done, but he with a chuckle replied that maybe it couldn't, but he would be one who wouldn't say so till he tried. So he buckled right in with the trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hit it. He started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. Somebody scoffed, "Oh, you'll never do that. At least no one has ever done it." But he took off his coat and he took off his hat, and first thing we knew, he'd begun it. With a lift of his chin and a bit of a grin, without doubting or quit it, he started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. There are thousands to tell you it cannot be done. There are thousands to prophesy failure. There are thousands to point out to you one by one the dangers that wait to assail you. But just buckle in with a bit of a grin, just take off your coat and go to it. Just start in to sing as you tackle the thing that cannot be done, and you'll do it.
That's It Couldn't Be Done by KCUR intern Beth Lipoff. I want to go to one more here, too, a little teeny tiny poem. KCUR's UpToDate senior producer Stephen Steigman reads, "Don't worry if your job is small," and this is by Anonymous.
Don't worry if your job is small and your rewards are few. Remember that the mighty oak was once a nut like you.
Why'd you pick that one?
Well, all of us think that, and it's great. And both of those poems, I think, you know, they're easy to memorize. They stick with you, and you know, they'll keep you going. And they make you remember that, of course, you can do these things that are hard and they're worth doing. And the illustration for those is one of my favorites in the book. I think that I was really lucky to work with John Muth, who's a
they're terrific illustrations.
Children's illustrator. And I think that for kids who don't like to read, the pictures give a way in. And for kids who like words, the pictures add to it. But there's a little mouse on a motorcycle who's trying to jump over to loose leaf binders. And it looks impossible, but you know he's going to do it.
Again, the book that Caroline Kennedy has come out with is Poems to Learn by Heart. You know, I imagine that sometimes, Caroline, that when people meet you for the first time, they have tears in their eyes. I think I've read that somewhere. How common is that, and how do you react to that?
I think that, my parents were in the White House at a time that was really transformative for this country. And so I understand that people, it was an important part of their life. And I'm really grateful for the fact that they care enough to come out and say hello and remember those times as so important.
Yeah, you get the sense that it's just something your parents represented that was just so powerful and maybe enduring that people are reacting to so powerfully when they meet someone like you.
Yeah, well, we're now commemorating the 50th anniversary of my father's presidency. So it's a long time ago, and it's really remarkable how emotional people still are about the events of that time.
Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation with Caroline Kennedy, 816-235-2888. Our email address is uptodate@kcur.org. You can go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us @KCUR Up to Date. You know, there's so much electricity, it seems to me, that's wrapped up in the name Kennedy. Has that been tough for you to contend with over so many years?
Well, it's always been my name, and I'm really proud of my family.
Sure, of course.
I have a wonderful family, and my extended family is just a source of great strength and joy and fun and laughter. So, there have been hard times, too, obviously, as there are, for everyone in every family. But I'm very lucky.
I imagine that being a Kennedy carries with it, enormous advantages and maybe a few challenges, too. Am I right about that as you go about your everyday life?
Well, probably. Yeah. How about your last name? How about Steve Kraske? Doesn't that carry some challenges, too?
Not like Caroline Kennedy. I hate to break this to you. Not like yours.
I don't know.
Yeah, not even close. You're married, and you have three grown kids of your own. Do some people look at you and ever feel that maybe you're alone because of the passing of members of your own immediate family? They don't recognize that you have your own family out there?
Well, I don't know, because I'm inside of me, and you're asking me what other people think, so you probably should be asking somebody else.
Yeah, but you see these people every day, all the time.
Oh, yeah, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, I read in college that you considered becoming a photojournalist, but soon realized you could never make a living observing other people because they were too busy watching you. And I'm wondering how tough that was for you to lose out on a dream like that.
Well, I'm really happy with the way everything has turned out in my life. So, I still, take pictures. I think that was probably overstated. Of course, we should all believe everything that we hear and read in the press, but...
Well.
That one might, I don't think it was really a heartbreaking dream that never came true.
To be
a singer and dancer, that would have been much better.
Yeah. Caroline Kennedy, again, is our guest. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is uptodate@kcur.org. Being in the public eye has never really been your thing. How tiring is it for you? Day in and day out.
I'm getting really exhausted right now.
Are you?
No.
Stop it. Yeah.
I do work. I've done all these books. I've gone out and talked about them. I've worked in the New York City public schools for the last 10 years with kids and in classrooms. So I'm out and about.
Mm-hmm. And how much do you enjoy the classroom work?
I like all of it. I like this working for the systemic reform. I like the... that aspect of it. I liked working with the kids. I think it's really important. I think we have a serious problem in this country, and I'm interested in trying to see how we might be able to solve it somehow.
And we've been dealing with serious problems in the Kansas City, Missouri School District for decades, and you just don't get a sense that we're going to be able to turn the corner on that anytime soon. And I'm wondering if you're seeing the same thing out in New York and where do we go from here? Any sense of what you think we need to be thinking about?
I think people are – there is a lot of innovation going on, and I think we need to encourage that. I think we need to – as a society, we really need to focus on this problem and realize that schools need to do a better job, but also as a community, we need to support kids, you know, after school, in the evening. Families have a role to play. The community has a role to play. Books like this hopefully will have a role to play. I mean, I think it's really a question of making it a priority and surrounding kids with a sense of how important this is and, you know, obviously supporting our teachers, but also holding them accountable.
You know, there are a sense here there have been improvements and advances, but the road ahead still remains so long, and people do get discouraged here. So much has been tried here, the spending of tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, and yet, you know, the page really hasn't turned. And
well, it's always new kids.
Yeah. Yeah. What's being tried in New York or anywhere across the country that sort of appeals to you that you think maybe is something we should be looking at?
Well, I think a lot of the large school, although many large schools are good, the small schools where the kids are really known and seem to be working much better. And that's not necessarily charter schools. It can be, but it's really holding kids to a standard, you know, starting earlier on. Obviously, we need to focus more in middle school because that's where kids start to lose interest. But I think that really the more individual attention, I mean, you know it from your own life, that kids can get, and the more encouragement and the more material. I mean, a lot of what I see that they have to do in school is really boring, and I feel bad for them.
There's a lot of boring stuff.
There's a lot of boring stuff going on in school. But there's a lot of great stuff going on in school, too. And if you can tap into kids, that's why the arts are so important, because they make kids want to come to school and they give them a reason to, and they tap into their creativity. And once a kid is turned on, then, you know, they don't need much. It's just a question of getting them to that point. And I know there's been a lot. I actually came out here for my first book, on the Bill of Rights, and I visited some schools because we were looking into some other cases at that time. I think you had school funding cases going on.
Yeah. Well, there's so much that goes into the quality of the teacher, a whole bunch of recent research talking about that as being perhaps pivotal. Perhaps there's so many things that are pivotal, but that's one thing now that people seem to be looking at. And, you know, kids get bored in school and you wonder if that shouldn't be allowed to happen, you know, or at least as much as it does.
Right.
Let's go to some phone calls here, 816-235-2888. Linda from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I was wanting to ask Caroline how many languages she's fluent in and if Japanese would be one of those languages.
Well, my French and Spanish used to be pretty good, but I don't have as much chance to practice them, and I don't speak any Japanese.
Your family has created an award that we need more of in this country, and it's called the Profile in Courage Award. It was given to a public official or officials whose actions demonstrate politically courageous leadership in the spirit of John F. Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage. The latest recipient of that award is former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. I guess because you have an award like this, it suggests that maybe you think we need more courage in our politics today.
Well, there are a lot of people serving who are courageous, and I think the award is intended to shine a light on them and remind the rest of us that we need to both support, expect courage, you know, celebrate it when we find it, and demand it more often of our public servants. So I think that hopefully the award has a mission of both continuing my father's work and belief that courage is the most important quality in public life, and then also celebrating it where we find it today. And I think that for Gabby Giffords to sort of recommit herself to the political process is incredibly courageous, obviously to survive and persevere through her terrible injury, but also to see politics as a way of solving the problem, I think is really courageous. And so I think that's what we're honoring this year.
You know, one just quick question about politics before I lose you here, Caroline. Would you like to see Hillary Clinton run for president?
Sure.
Yeah. Any sense? Do you expect it to happen?
I don't know. I mean, everybody seems to think it's going to happen. So,
yeah,
that'd be exciting.
Well, Caroline, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Enjoy your time in Kansas City.
Thank you so much.
That's Caroline Kennedy. She's speaking tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza. The event is sold out, but you can still order signed copies of the book from ReneDayBooks.com or by calling 913-384-3126. Again, Caroline Kennedy's book, Poems to Learn by Heart. You can find more information on our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow on the program, we'll get a personal look at First Lady Abigail Adams from her great-great-great-great-great-grandson. Also, we'll discuss what it feels like to become a grandparent and deal with your children becoming parents with Anne Lamott. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.